Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Emergency alerts only work, only save lives if people trust them. Today, the mayor of Denver is apologizing to the city for breaking that trust and laying out a new plan for emergency alerts and tornado sirens after three big mistakes in 6 months. Our Mark Salinger spoke with the mayor.
The rain was falling and severe weather was rolling through Denver, but the tornado sirens that blared through the city on June 8th should never have sounded.
Trust is really important, and we broke that trust and we own it. We apologize for it and we had to fix it.
Today, Mayor Mike Johnson announced changes to the city's emergency alerts, tornado sirens, and emergency management training. It comes after three different instances where alerts or sirens were activated or sent out to the wrong people since the start of the year.
And now we've changed the system to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Back on January 17th, Denver officials accidentally sent out a citywide wireless emergency alert when trying to alert a small area near the University of Denver about a shelter in place. They blamed it on a software glitch. On April 18th, Denver police said that an all clear that was supposed to go to a one block radius went to residents of the whole city. This was human error. Now the city will primarily use a different type of alert system, moving away from the wireless emergency alerts.
We will move away from this WIA system towards a REN system, which is different in its structure and it's much more targeted in the outreach.
And on June 8th, someone called 911 to report a tornado. A Denver fire employee activated the citywide tornado sirens, even though there was no tornado or even a warning issued by the National Weather Service.
What we found is obviously there's human error, and we know there are places for human error, but on systems of this scale, you have to have protections to prevent human error from having this kind of impact.
Now a confirmation will be required from the National Weather Service before the sirens are activated for weather events, and it'll be up to the Director of Public Safety or Emergency Management to give approval for non-weather events.
If we had had a second person to overlook that and we'd had one point of final approval for something as big as a citywide tornado siren, we would have caught it.
City also says they're going to implement a new training annually that can help people understand the protocols. Two of the three mistakes in the past 6 months were blamed on human error, and the mayor himself admits that can't happen, Kyle.
Mark, we'd offered here in a commentary a couple weeks ago that the mayor needed to take charge of this, own it, and fix it himself. Did he tell you he thought about firing anybody, or was that off the table?
I asked him if he ever considered replacing the heads of emergency management or public safety. He told me no. He believes those people are the right people to lead these departments.
We shall see. Mark Salinger, thank you. There's a real race for Colorado's safest Democratic seat in Congress. Representative Diana DeGette, in office for 29 years, is fighting off a challenge from Democratic Socialist Melot Kyros, a 29-year-old former corporate attorney who lost her job for writing an essay critical of Israel. DeGette has declined to come on this program and answer our questions about her views and her record. Tonight's next conversation is with Melot Kyros. We began with her case to replace DeGette and her views as a Democratic Socialist. Congresswoman Diana DeGette has represented Denver in Congress for about 30 years. Why should voters fire her and hire you?
Because the Congresswoman, I think, has really failed to meaningfully push the kind of progressive legislation that would make a meaningful difference for working families in this country. She, I believe, has failed to do so because she's taken millions of dollars from Big Pharma, Big Energy and Oil, defense contractors.
What evidence do you have that she's changed a belief or refused to take a stand because of cash that she's received?
What I identify in her voting record and its relationship with some of the companies that support her is a direct relationship with either advancing their agenda or doing nothing to advance the agenda of working people. So, for example, she takes a lot of money from big pharmaceutical companies, from big health insurance companies, and the crowning achievement that she constantly touts is the Cures Act, a piece of legislation that frankly, it was just a big giveaway for a lot of big pharmaceutical companies. And Senator Warren and Senator Sanders both said this as this bill was getting debated. And again, she takes all this money from these big pharmaceutical companies that were benefiting from this specific piece of legislation.
Best I can tell, Colorado has never elected a self-described socialist to Congress. What do you say to Democratic primary voters who are not socialists, who are capitalists,
and are deciding who to vote for in this race?
Yeah. Well, first I'll tell them that we already have socialism, right? It's in the roads that we drive on. It's in our fire stations. It's in the public schools we send our kids to. What I'm calling for is the same security that we have in those institutions to be in our healthcare, to be in our access to nutritional food, to be in making sure that we have universal child care and universal elder care. We're embarking on a new era right now where AI is going to change the entirety of our labor economy as we know it. And we're not ready. We're not ready for what it looks like when all these jobs potentially get taken away and wiped out by machinery. And if that happens, we need to make sure that people's basic needs are protected. And that's only through programs that would be socialist.
You were 1 year out of law school at an elite global law firm, is how they describe themselves, before you got fired for writing an essay that was critical of Israel. You came home to enroll in a PhD program. You've been working at a coffee shop. What life experiences and knowledge do you have to be effective in Congress?
Yeah. Well, the first I would describe as the life experience of just being a young renter in this city, being a tipped minimum wage worker, and Denver is the fifth least affordable city in the country right now. And so experiencing what it's like to stretch your paycheck and try to pay for rent, try to pay for health insurance, try to pay for your car note, all of those things, the proximity to that struggle, I think is something that's important to have when you're going to Congress to represent the people of the city.
When you talk about knowing financial struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, you're knowing financial struggle by choice.
Yeah.
You are a corporate attorney who's going to get a PhD.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that you're having trouble making ends meet when you step out of that world, but you kind of chose to step out of that world.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. But I did grow up with the same struggle, right? I immigrated here in 98 when I was a baby. My dad had nothing to his name when we first moved here. And so I watched him and my mom work 2 to 3 jobs at a time. I watched them try and figure out how to stretch those dollars for our rent, to stretch those dollars for me and the resources that I needed.
When our next conversation continues, Melat Kiros says the Hamas massacre of Israeli civilians was the quote unquote inevitable consequence of Israel's actions. I asked her if she feels the same way about the killing of Americans on 9/11 and American foreign policy. Quick thank you tonight for everyone who helped boost the anti-hunger efforts of the nonprofit Sun Valley Kitchen and Community Center in Denver. Nearly $55,000 in donations from your latest Word of Thanks microgiving campaign adds to the $18 million plus that you have raised over the last 6 years. You can go to wordofthanks.org, to see a map of all 300 plus campaigns across Colorado and to nominate a worthy nonprofit in your area. Most unaffiliated voters will not vote in Colorado's party primaries this month. I'll have a word about why I'm going to vote in a party primary for the first time in my life. Next. Democratic Congresswoman Diana DeGette and her allies are painting her challenger, Melat Kiros, as anti-Semitic for Kiros' criticism of Israel. Kiros called the October 7th massacre of Israeli civilians by Hamas, quote, the inevitable consequence of apartheid. Is it a suggestion that Israel had it coming?
No, not at all. It's about understanding the conditions in which violence and war happens, right? Israel is a country that has been accused of apartheid and occupation for decades now and has been able to resist any kind of change despite all of the frustration on the world stage that people have had for the conditions that Palestinians have been living in. And I hope that as an ally that Israel claims to be, that they would be responsive to our demands to make sure that they change those conditions so that we can actually finally start to the work of peace building and delivering aid to the people in need.
Do you believe that the 9/11 terrorist attacks on America were the inevitable consequence of American foreign policy?
Inevitable in the sense that we destabilized a lot of the Middle East, that forced people to believe that another act of violence was the only response. And again, just like I said before, our responsibility is to getting rid of those conditions that lead to violence in the first place.
You recently campaigned with Hassan Piker. He's got a huge streaming audience. Do you agree with his statement that Hamas is a lesser evil than Israel?
No, I don't.
You've called Israel's actions in Gaza a genocide. You've called for an arms embargo against Israel. Would that include the U.S. selling or financing defensive weapons that Israel uses to protect itself against rocket attacks from Hezbollah or Iran?
Yes. Yeah.
It would.
It would.
Why not differentiate between offensive weapons used to wage war against another population and then defensive weapons that are used to protect civilians from outside attack?
I believe that our selling of arms to Israel, defensive or offensive, gives them the cover to continue the genocide that's taking place in Palestine and now the ethnic cleansing that's taking place in Lebanon.
There's a debate within the Democratic Party and elsewhere about what is anti-Semitism and what is anti-Zionism. Mm-hmm. That firebombing attack in Boulder on mm-hmm. the group of peaceful protesters there that were protesting in support of the Jewish hostages being held by Hamas, was that firebombing attack on them an act of anti-Semitism?
I don't know what was in the heart of the perpetrator. All I know is that he went and attacked innocent people because of what they might have believed. And I don't even know what the people that were at that protest believed, too. In fact, most of them were probably just there to, you know, ask that the people who were kidnapped during October 7th be returned home to their families. That's not a political statement in and of itself.
But you would not describe it as anti-Semitism?
I don't know. I don't know what his intentions were.
You can see my full 35-minute conversation with Melot Kiros on the next YouTube channel and 9news.com. That's also where you can see my discussion from last week with a third candidate in the race, Wanda James. Again, Congresswoman Diane DeGette declined to answer any of our questions. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along. Busy afternoon in your office. We've got some tornado warnings out.
Two of them, Kyle. We got two tornado warnings, including this one. This is the view from Yuma as a tornado warn storm approaches you here in Yuma in Yuma County. In fact, within the last couple of minutes, that storm is now no longer tornado warn. So a little good news there. That just coming in, they canceled the tornado warning component, but still a nasty storm. This one, a history of up to teacup-sized hail. That's 3 inches in diameter, so a nasty storm. And there's a little rotation still within this as it approaches Yuma and western Yuma County and eastern Washington County right now as well. Southern Colorado got this tornado warn storm that is now pushing south of the Highway 50 corridor, approaching La Junta with some big hail. In Denver, our threat for severe weather will be mainly tomorrow and Wednesday, and perhaps into Thursday as well. 7-day forecast, potential impact alert for Tuesday and Wednesday because of that threat for large hail.
Every election season, I repeat the same line that I borrowed from legendary CBS newsman Bob Schieffer, who borrowed it from his mother. Go vote. It'll make you feel big and strong. Voting makes you feel strong, and it strengthens our society when as many people as possible participate in a meaningful way in our elections. And that's why I've decided, as an unaffiliated voter, that this month I will vote in a party primary for the first time in my life. If you're also a member of Colorado's largest political party, no party, I'd encourage you to think about voting in a party primary too. Not as an ideological preference or siding with that party, because if we wanted to belong to a party, we wouldn't be unaffiliated. But because Colorado's major races are almost always decided these days in the Democratic primary. So that is where I'll vote this month. It's the same reason I'd encourage unaffiliated voters in a solidly red state to vote in a Republican primary, regardless of their own personal politics. Everyone's vote will count in the general election, but where your vote is most likely to matter is in the primary for the party that dominates each state. On this program lately, we've heard from prominent right-leaning, unaffiliated voices in Colorado, increasingly coming to the conclusion that voting in the Democratic primary is where their vote will matter most. That logic holds no matter what your political views. It is simply the reality in Colorado and other blue states, and the reverse in red states dominated by Republicans. So, unaffiliated voters, I get that it can feel odd to pick up a party's primary ballot. But it's not an endorsement of that party or even its candidates. It's just a recognition that that's where the races are likely to be decided. And the more people who meaningfully participate in our elections, the better off society will be. Go vote in a party primary. It'll make democracy big and strong. A community wins its fight to keep an Olympic-sized swimming pool, but it'll be years before they can dive in. Folks in three neighborhoods in Denver don't have an outdoor public swimming pool, and they say it's not a coincidence all of those are diverse communities. They spoke with our Angelie McCall.
4 years gone. Summers, this neighborhood won't get back.
You know, it is sad.
The Mestizo Curtis Park pool has been closed since 2023 to residents like Rosie Sneros.
Yes. this is the core of the neighborhood. It is. For all the families and kids for generations that have been coming here to swim.
The pool is closed over renovations, but residents will tell you the years-long delay didn't have to happen.
I don't think they did authentic community engagement. I think they could have done it better. And if they had, we wouldn't be facing the delays that we're facing.
Neighbors like Milo Marquez learned the city proposed a smaller scale pool, almost half the size. That's when they pushed back, forming a coalition to demand a pool comparable to other affluent neighborhoods. The earliest opening would be 2028.
A delay of 5 years wouldn't have happened in other communities. I think we're often forgotten. We're often not respected enough to make sure that our pool is supporting the needs of the community.
Mestizo Curtis Park Pool is just one of three outdoor pools closed by Denver Parks and Recreation. The two others in Ruby Hill and Sunnyside. All of these neighborhoods, historically Latino or Black communities.
And it is disappointing to see that there are pools in that inverted L where the majority of the minorities live in this city, closed. And we hope that Denver Parks and Recreation can really start to work with the community.
The city did agree to redesign Mestizo Curtis Park and keep the original layout, but it took a fight at the cost of time.
Last year, my grandson put him in a little bucket and he was happy, but I was like, God, that's horrible. I can't take him to the pool to swim when he could be over there swimming.
Another summer without a pool. Another summer, they say, waiting to receive the same investment others got without the fight.
We're still the same people and we still live in this neighborhood and we still deserve the best, and so do our kids.
Denver Parks and Rec shared they have an extensive aquatic program and it ranks the highest in the country with almost twice the national average of indoor and outdoor pools, adding that they have recently invested in significant funding in higher equity need neighborhoods and have advocated for additional pools in other similar areas like Barnum and La Alma Lincoln Park. Kyle?
So, Angelina, if somebody in Curtis Park wants to go to an outdoor public pool, how far do they have to go?
Yeah, I mean, the nearest one would be in Elyria, Swansea, and they say it would take about two different buses on public transportation. When we think about pools, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I think back to, like, my teenage days when I was a kid, certainly not driving places, right? And so that would just be out of reach for a lot of kids who depend on, like, an outdoor summer activity, right?
Yeah. Pools are summer. Angelina McCall, thank you. Back with your feedback next. Feedback from Don in Steamboat says, kudos, Kyle. I'm an unaffiliated voter who recognizes we must vote in party primaries or we're simply rolling over and letting the parties pick our options. Don, I wouldn't say must vote in primaries, especially not for unaffiliated journalists who wrestle with a lot of complicated ethical issues around voting. But I do think that it is a defensible choice for journalists to vote in open primaries, as I'm about to do for the very first time this month. I think it's a really smart move for unaffiliated voters who aren't journalists to not sit out this crucial round when in Colorado, a lot of important decisions are being made. And at the end of the day, it is our right as Americans to make our own voting decisions. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.